Welcome to Begin With Yes with Paul Boynton on Empower Radio, a show to help you create and embrace real personal change. You can overcome the challenges in front of you. You just begin with yes. Here's your host, Paul Boynton.
Hey, thank you, Brent. This always is one of the highlights of my week, being able to do this Empower Radio show. And I'm excited about the one that we're going to be doing today because my guest is Mary Murphy, who is a Charles Schwab independent branch leader who works with clients on a range of financial issues and guidance, including giving investment advice and helping them with financial planning and retirement planning. And we'll be talking a bit about that. But Mary also has kind of a fascinating and pretty well-rounded personal life as well. And there are things that I want to talk about there too. So Mary, welcome. It's so good to have you with us today.
Great. Thanks, Paul. Glad to be here.
Great. Mary, you and I have never met face to face, but we have a friend in common, Tammy Boucher, who thought we would enjoy exploring a few things. So, and I trust Tammy, so I know this is going to be a fun conversation. Financial careers, that's not the most exciting kind of career, at least to many people. And I'm wondering, is this, and I know you sort of had an interesting pathway that got you to there, but I want to bring you all the way back to high school, and not that it was that long ago, but can you remember when you were 16 what you were thinking you wanted to be when you grew up?
Well, actually, I didn't have a lot of say in that. My parents were trying to steer me toward teaching because they were both teachers.
Okay.
And I had an entrepreneurial streak, and so I was a little bit resistant, even though I admired them for what they did, because they were really, really great teachers. My father was a reading specialist, and my mother taught business at the business high school.
Okay.
And so I compromised with them, and I began my college career studying communication disorders, because as a speech therapist, I knew that I would effectively be employed by a school system, but I also could have my own private practice on the side.
Okay.
Be a business owner. So, you know, that's kind of, that was at the very beginning when I was first trying to figure out what I wanted to be when I grew up.
But now that, you sort of described what your parents wanted you to be, mm-hmm. But what was your sort of fantasy around what you would be?
Well, I knew I wanted to own my own business, yep. You know, kind of be in control of my own destiny. One of the easiest paths to wealth in America, or actually for that matter in any country in the world, is to own your own business and to either have some skill or be able to produce some product or service that someone else is willing to pay for. And so, you know, I realized this at an early age, and so you know, I began taking an interest in, reading about successful businesses and, you know, kind of trying to develop the skills that are considered critical success factors to owning and running a successful business.
And was the end point, as you sort of thought about running your own business and being your own boss, was your end point around financial success, or were there other variables that played into what you had in mind?
Well, actually, I came into the financial services industry in a very roundabout manner. So as I mentioned, I started off studying to become a speech therapist. And in my first year of college, I joined the college's debate team, and in one of the early competitions, my team ended up drawing against Harvard University. So the debate coach thought we were going to lose pretty quickly, and I have to admit, we thought we were going to lose pretty quickly too. But Harvard, was the one that got to speak first, and they chose some really, you know, esoteric angle on the exclusionary rule. And so, to make a long story short, I ended up leading our team, and in 5 minutes flat, I ended up beating them by proving that their case was not prima facie, meaning that it couldn't stand on its own 2 feet, and the judge agreed with me. So when we went back to the coach's room, she thought we had been defeated already, so she started to console us, and my partner, Joan, started laughing, and she said, oh no, Mary wiped up the floor with them in 5 minutes flat. So the coach started looking at me in a different way, and she said, wow, you're studying the wrong thing. You really need to be, you know, you need to pursue a career in law or in public relations or business because you're one of the most persuasive people we've ever met. And so that's how I got redirected, if you will, toward a business career. And I originally started out in the technology field, you know, working as a systems analyst for ITT Corporation, and I kind of, you know, worked my way up to an assistant director position in that field when one day my IBM sales rep said to me, you know, you can make five times as much selling, you know, these computers as implementing them. And I said, really? And so sure enough, she told me her salary, and it was about five times as much as I was making. And so I ended up, you know, changing careers, going to work for Digital Equipment Corporation, which I know a lot of New Hampshireites also worked for Digital, too, especially down here in Nashua, where they had a very big presence. They had a big presence in Merrimack. And, you know, at some point, Ken Olson said he didn't think anybody was going to need the personal computer. And I realized very quickly, oops, I better get out of here. So I ended up going to work for Lotus Development, who was acquired by IBM. And to make a long story short, I was very successful in marketing and in that firm and also with IBM. And I eventually left IBM after heading their international telco and ISP solutions division. So this is the division of IBM that works on the software layer of the internet throughout the world. And it was a lot of international travel, and my elderly parents got sick. And so I ended up stepping out of that career to take care of them full time. And you're not going to believe this, but I actually ended up going into teaching when I decided to go back to work, because I didn't want to go back into high technology, because right. I was going to have to travel all the time. And so my parents finally got their wish, and my father got to see it before he died, because I went back to college at Riviere, which has an excellent program for teachers. Can't say enough good things about Riviere. And, I ended up getting a master's degree from them and going to work at West High School, working for the town of Bedford, teaching students about math and personal finance. And I ended up sponsoring one of the first investment clubs for that high school, and it was a very successful investment club. We ended up winning the 2006 and 2007 New Hampshire stock market simulations, and this is despite the fact that Fidelity backed Merrimack High and used to win routinely. So West came out of nowhere those 2 years.
You're kind of a competitive person, aren't you?
Just a tad.
It also sounds like you're a very self-confident person and competitive, as I just mentioned, and not afraid of hard work or challenges. And where did that come from? And I mean, has that always been what you've been like?
Yeah, I mean, I think people, who know me know that I'm a little bit on the intense side, and I've always been driven from an early age. But what drives me is not necessarily, winning awards or things like that. I mean, God knows I've got enough on my resume, but that's not where my satisfaction comes from. It's really, trying to do the best that I can do for the benefit of other people. And in fact, that's really, it's a strength and a weakness because, I always one area of struggle in my life is, making myself go to the gym on a regular basis so that I can stay healthy, so that I can be there for my elderly mother who's still alive and also for my clients. And so, everybody has their, foibles, if you will, and getting into a regular fitness routine is mine, mostly because of my schedule.
Mary, as a financial planner, one of the things that you are talking to people about are making their dreams come true. Dreams, and many times what Jane Fonda calls Act Three of our lives, the sort of the retirement phase. And I'm wondering, what do you enjoy about talking to people about their dreams and getting ready for this Act Three?
Well, it's interesting. Like the first thing I do, because people are at different stages in terms of being able to, realize their dream, they're at different stages trying to prepare for that. The first thing I want to make sure that everybody understands is that, there was an anonymous philosopher who was very wise, and he once said that happiness is not having what you want, it's wanting what you have. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, in America today, there's a lot of materialism, and so a lot of people are trying to keep up with the Joneses, and in doing so, they end up spending everything they make early in life. And then it becomes difficult, if not impossible, to achieve their dream later in life, because they failed to prepare and right. They failed to accumulate the wealth necessary, to you know, to have a high quality of life in retirement.
Right. But talking to people about that when they're in their 50s or even older than that, you know, that sort of sounds like, well, it's too bad you shouldn't have done that, when really those days are gone. So how do you get people to sort of shift their focus to talking about, well, what is possible and how do we make the best of what time we have left from a financial perspective so that we can enjoy our retirement?
Well, this practice is very optimistic. And, you know, we believe that every human, you know, has something inside themselves that is of value to other people. And so we don't let our older clients get discouraged. I mean, a lot of them admittedly wish they had saved more by the time they get to us. But what we do for them is we give them hope. And but we're also realistic. We tell them, you know, life is not a Disney movie. If you don't plan and if you don't now take seriously the need to save and invest, you know, you're not going to live happily ever after. And so we try and get their attention, and then we try and take them through a process that's a very disciplined process to help them identify, you know, what is your income need after you turn your paycheck off, and what is it going to take in order for you to get from where you are today with however much or however little you've saved to a safe place that you can be happy with and, you know, safe in.
Mm-hmm. You know, as I was listening to you talk, Mary, I think of all the people who actually did do all the right things when they were younger, who then, because of the economy over the last several years, things sort of got kind of chaotic and they lost some ground. And I know that some people went through a period where they were very fearful and may, in fact, still be at that place where they are very fearful, because it's kind of a it's a little bit less predictable. Doing all the right things doesn't necessarily guarantee that everything is going to go the way you thought or you were told it was going to. How do you work with people to deal with some of the certain uncertainties that are just part of people's financial realities today?
That's a great question. I mean, I think we're seeing a lot more of that in this economy than we have previously in our practice because of the high unemployment. One of the things that we see that's very common is that people are having to spend their retirement assets at earlier ages. And, you know, they're very frightened, understandably so, about what their future will look like if they spend all this money now and don't have it for later. So the best advice we can give people in that situation is to seek professional help where, you know, what the advisor is going to do is, first of all, they're going to go through your budget from top to bottom, starting with the big ticket items and working their way down to the smaller stuff to try and really boil it down to your essential needs versus any kind of wants. And what they're trying to do there is slow the spending down. And then once they've completed that exercise, they're going to take a look at your savings and investments, and they're going to try and reconfigure those. They're going to reallocate those, probably from a growth strategy, which is normally what people are doing when they're accumulating, you know, toward a retirement goal. Mm-hmm. They're going to try and reallocate that to more of a primarily income goal with some growth, just so that you don't, you know, deplete these investment accounts too quickly.
Right.
You know, and you know, through that combined process, most of the time we can, you know, we can give people quite a long time and allow them, you know, to search for another job or to create, you know, perhaps, you know, come up with an idea, if you will, for how they will make a living if they are unable to find another job again.
You know, another thing that I'm fascinated with is how the whole concept of retirement has changed dramatically. I think in part because of the fiscal realities of people's lives, but we used to think that people retired at 65 and that was pretty routine and pretty predictable. And in fact, in many companies, certainly in my lifetime, that was not only the expectation, but that was the requirement. And now the thought of retiring at 65 for many people is not only not possible, but not even desirable. People have a sense of wanting to work longer. And many people are using sort of this next phase of their work life to do things that are more meaningful rather than less focused on the paycheck.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I mean, I think research has shown that when people remain active, once they've left their, their first career, they actually end up having a higher quality of life, better health, and living longer because, they're more intellectually stimulated, and the activity also is helpful to keeping them healthy. And so, the age of 65 as a retirement age here in America is really an arbitrary age. Mm-hmm. And, what we're seeing is that people are living much longer than we did in the past. In fact, there are certain cancers like prostate cancer and breast cancer where if they're caught early enough, it's amazing, the cure rate for those two types of cancers. And every year that goes by, these large pharmaceutical firms with all of the R&D that they're spending are coming up with newer and better ways to either slow down certain diseases or, in some cases, eliminate them altogether. So I believe that people are going to continue to live longer and longer. And as you've so correctly pointed out, it's really, some people may be burnt out in their current careers, but they're excited by the prospects of being able to, kind of think about having a second act, if you will, in their retirement, when they're in retirement and working either part-time or pursuing some business idea they had or some hobby that they had. Maybe it's community service or volunteerism. But increasingly we're seeing people staying active, way after age 65. And as you said, some of it's economic necessity because healthcare costs are inflating at three times other inflation. And so one of the biggest ticket items that people have during retirement is actually paying for their health care after their, if they were a company employee and had group insurance, usually that's heavily subsidized, and that subsidy goes away once they turn off their paycheck.
Mary, what was the transition like for you when you, because it sounded like you were traveling all over the country, you had kind of a intense job with high expectations, and it sounded like you were having fun too. And then to make that decision that you were going to stay home and take care of your parents who were getting older and needed some assistance. How was that transition for you?
Well, it's interesting you say that. It was a tough time for me because I had I was starting to reach the peak of my career. I had a very prestigious job as the head of a global division, and it was in an emerging space and technology that was really taking off. So my financial prospects were improving every year. But that being said, I never forgot, all the times that my parents had been there for me as I was growing up, and I realized that it was time for me to pay them back. And so my father had pancreatic cancer. And my mother was trying to care for him by herself in the home. And even though they had long-term care insurance, there still was quite a bit of care that needed to be delivered by friends and family. Mm-hmm. Usually the care that you get in the home is not 24/7. Usually they'll teach the family to operate medical equipment and things of that nature. And so at some point my mother couldn't handle it anymore because she herself was in her late 70s at this time. Okay. And so that's when after I racked up three quick speeding tickets, my husband said, I think it'd be a good idea if you moved in with Mom. It was at least less expensive for us.
Yeah.
And so that's how I took the decision to do that. And, there was a period that I went through where, because I had worked so hard to get to the level that I got to, at IBM, it was very disconcerting, getting up every morning and not having, having all that work and, doing all that travel. But it also gave me time to reflect on my life and to recognize that, there's more to life than, just a career. Family is and should always be the highest priority. And so I didn't really hesitate to make that decision. And I certainly don't regret that decision. I know that my mother benefited enormously from having me present, to assist her with Dad's care.
Right.
But it was a very traumatic decision. And it's one I think that a lot of other Americans are going to be facing in the future if they've not already had to face it, because we are an aging population, and there is something called the sandwich generation. And the sandwich generation is really getting sandwiched these days because of high college costs. Because the kids, when they graduate, are not always able to sustain themselves initially. And so there's something called the boomerang effect where, you know, college-age students are coming back into the household. Meanwhile, elderly parents are coming into the household. And so you have this sandwich generation, you know, who's trying to care for, you know, both ends of the spectrum in terms of their families. And this, too, is contributing to part of the problem in Americans preparing for their own retirements.
Mary, what are some things that, that you've learned that you're able to integrate into your own sort of planning for not just your retirement and really not so much on the financial side, because my guess is that you've got that covered pretty well. But what are some of the more sort of less tangible lessons that you've learned both by caring for your parents and making some of the decisions that you've made from a career standpoint? And so as you contemplate your own sort of moving in that direction, what are some of the things that, that stand out to you as important?
I think that I think a couple lessons that I've learned is that you know, preparing to retire is not just about making sure that you've saved enough money to be able to replace your income in retirement. There's also a component that you have to reflect on in terms of, are you emotionally ready to stop working? Because I have seen in my practice very high-powered executives, you know, turn off their paychecks right off into the sunset. And in the beginning, they're okay because they're traveling a lot, they're going out to dinner, they're having some fun. But then as they get into sort of the middle of their retirement years where they're starting to slow down, you know, all of this activity, you know, they kind of don't know what to do with themselves, and it can create a lot of stress.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why, I encourage people to reflect on, you know, ways to gracefully, you know, segue into this period where you're moving away from your day-to-day job into a retirement stage, and maybe you should look at developing new interests and ways that you can give back to the community, or ways that you can, at least work part-time to keep yourself active and continuing to enjoy life.
Mm-hmm.
I think some other lessons are having gone through this, you know, myself with my parents, children that have elderly parents still alive really need to give some thought for what's the plan in terms of their long-term care, because if you don't, you may end up delivering it, and you may not, there may not be money there, you know, to provide for professionals, you know, skilled nursing, for example, you know, to assist you with some of the things that you're not capable of doing for your parents.
Right.
And so not enough people think about that until it's too late, and now the event is upon you, and you've got an elderly parent that's critically ill and needs help, and the elderly parent hasn't properly prepared. Perhaps the elderly parent doesn't have long-term care insurance or some kind of a strategy for how their long-term care is going to get delivered, because just as death is certain, there comes a time when our body ages to the point where we can no longer do certain activities of daily living for ourselves.
Right.
And so if you don't give some thought to that in advance, it comes back to bite you later in life, and it can be very disruptive for your children.
Mm-hmm.
So that's another lesson.
Mary, it seems like in one way or another, you are and have been motivated to help other people, and that's been kind of a constant theme in your life. Is that something that was instilled, do you think, in you by your parents?
Yeah, I think it was, because, again, they both, pursued the teaching profession, mm-hmm. and teaching is all about, you know, transferring knowledge to other people so that, other people can benefit. And I think that, that's what I kind of do in my current career. The best advisors are the ones that help their clients really understand, you know, how to be more independent, and, help them understand how to be successful in investing, you know, without losing all of the money that they've worked so hard to accumulate.
Right.
We don't just invest their money for them without, you know, making sure that they understand, you know, kind of the strategy and, you know, the risks and also the advantages of what it is that we're suggesting to them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one of the programs that I run locally, actually, this is worth mentioning. So I belong to, I'm a member of one of the oldest nonprofits in the United States that's focused on women's financial literacy. And it's called the Women's Institute for Financial Education. Mm-hmm. And so we run a once-a-month program. It's not really affiliated with Schwab in any way, but Schwab is nice enough to let me use my branch, you know, as the facility.
Yep.
But the Women's Institute for Financial Education provides all of the educational material, and it's all very accurate and factual. A lot of the information comes from government websites. For example, the lessons concerning, you know, how to manage credit, how to improve your credit score are, you know, a lot of that information is provided by the FTC, which is the government agency that regulates credit. So we run a once-a-month program on the last Tuesday of every month at 6:30, you know, at our branch here in Nashua.
Great.
And it's really an invaluable program to try and enhance women's financial literacy.
It sounds in many ways like you are practicing what you preach, and that is to have interests that are diverse. And because of that, you probably will be in a very good position for your own retirement. In the few, we have less than a minute to go, but I'm just wondering, what's one dream of yours that you look forward to fulfilling in the years ahead?
I think, you know, my dream is that I want to leave a legacy. I don't have children. I have four nephews, but I don't have children of my own. So the legacy that I'm trying to build, you know, both through this Schwab branch that I've purchased as well as the Women's Institute for Financial Education program that I facilitate, mm-hmm. is to try and pass on the knowledge that my father gave to me when I was growing up about, you know, how to be, you know, how to be financially successful. Because with financial success comes security and, you know, comes control. And that's my gift that I'm trying to give to every man and woman, you know, and child that, you know, that comes into my practice and even those that choose not to, but who come to any of my speaking events or read my articles in the newspaper or participate in these monthly money clubs.
Mary, thank you. And I would be willing to bet that that dream will come true and is already coming true. You've been a wonderful guest. Tammy was right. We would have a fun conversation. And I want to thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you, Paul.
All right. And thank you all for listening to Begin With Yes on Empower Radio. We will see you next time. Have a great day.